おかけ忘れまや。
女のおかけ忘れまや。
Shimon Bhagavatam 10th Canto Chapter 1 Text 36
tam jugupsita karmanam
tam jugupsita karmanam
nisham samnira patrapam nisham samnira patrapam
nisham samnira patrapam
vasudeva mahabhaga
vasudeva mahabhaga
uvacha parishantrayam
uvacha parishantrayam
tam jugupsita karmanam
tam jugupsita karmanam
Nisham Samnirapatrapam
Nisham Samnirapatrapam
Vasudeva Mahabhaga
Vasudeva Mahabhaga
Uvacha Parisantrayan
Uvacha Parisantrayan
Unto him comes that Jugupsita Karmanam who is ready to commit such an offensive act
Nishamsam,
very cruel.
Nirapatrapam,
shameless. Vasudeva,
Vasudeva.
Mahabhaga,
the greatly fortunate father of
Vasudeva. Uvacha, said.
Parishantrayam,
pacifying. Wanting to pacify Kamsa.Who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. Purport. Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, is described here as Mahabhaga, a very upright and sober personality, because although Kamsa was ready to kill Vasudeva's wife,Vasudeva remained sober and unagitated. In a peaceful attitude, Vasudeva began to address Kamsa by putting forward reasonable arguments. Vasudeva was a great personality because he knew how to pacify a cruel person and how to forgive even the bitterest enemy. One who is fortunate is never caught, even by tigers or snakes. Om again, it's here on this step. Gananjanasalakya.This word, Nirapatrapam, some of us were stumbling on a bit, means shameless. And that is certainly the case of Kamsa. He made no pretensions about anything. If something got in the way of his sense gratification, he was immediately going to do something about it. This is called from the Vedic point of view, shameless and very cruel. But from the modern point of view, this is known as being very civilized and very positive and very egoistic in a good, healthy way. That it's natural in this world, any competent, wholesome individualwill immediately try to neutralize anything that gets in the way of his sense gratification. That is the natural belief of those who are covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. Especially at this point in Kali Yuga, you can see the predominance of passion and ignorance. If you can't see that predominance, then certainly you should study the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita,and study the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and learn how to see through the scriptures. As long as we are analyzing ourselves and the world around us with ordinary vision, we will not see what's going on. Training in Krishna consciousness begins with seeing through the eyes of the Shastra, Jnana Chakshus. That is a necessity. Otherwise, with this imperfect vision,that we have, if we go around trying to see this, trying to see that, we will simply see whatever the illusory energy allows us to see. And therefore, we'll never understand what to do with ourselves. We'll never understand the world around us. So many people today are commenting on the state of the world. And it's always like that. That's nothing new. So many so-called learned persons, are analyzing the world is like this now. What to do? What will the world be like in the future? How shall we prepare? This tendency has been there since time immemorial. But as long as one continues to take shelter of the Nushi energy, you'll never be able to see what's going on. So if you know anything about history in this world, in spite of so many endeavors to understand, the same problems are there. Just like, for example, now in the former Yugoslavia, they're having a huge blood bank. And after so much pretension, the United Nations is going to stop it. The civilized Western nations are going to stop it. No one's doing anything about it. No one wants to risk their own soldiers there because they don't want the wrath of the people back at home sending their boys to some useless place like the former Yugoslavia. And nobody these days sees any profit in the war, therefore that's the main reason why they're not entering into it. So in this way, after so many newspaper articles, so many TV shows, so many concerns, what to do about Bosnia, this thing is still going on. And it's been how many years now? 2 or 3 years? 3 years. You, of course, most of you have no need to be concerned with day by day what the media is talking about. Although Prabhupada said devotees should keep up with the news just so he doesn't look foolish. And of course the news here in New Zealand, in terms of international coverage, is minimized. But for the rest of the world, day after day after day, for 3 years, what are we going to do about Bosnia? What are we going to do about Bosnia? How are we going to stop the war there? How can civilized, dignified men feel free conscience when this ethnic cleansing is going on? But no one's done anything. It's still going on. So therefore, you can still see that even though people think they try to understand and analyze with their universities, the same thing happens. If we're going to actually see what the cause of the world's problems are, then we have to take shelter of the scriptures. Our scriptures are not simply books that we keep on the shelf to inspire ourselves in religious fervor. Our scriptures are not simply very wonderful metaphysical texts which have great value for the individual, but as far as practically doing something in the world, they're not that relevant. No. The Vedic scriptures actually contain the basis of world civilization. And any deviation from the Vedic scriptures can be shown to always produce extraordinarily harmful effects. Now people will say that, oh, we can hear the same thing from the Muslim fundamentalists. They want to run the whole Middle East based on the Quran. And they are sabotaging governments in Algeria or here or there because they don't want governments in Muslim countries to swing to the West. They want the traditional Quran to guide everything. Of course, on the one hand, it's very good that people want to have governments act according to Scripture. On the other hand, the Scripture has to be capable of actually appealing to people's intelligence and answering all their questions. And that is the problem. Only in the Vedic literatures will you find a comprehensive, broad, and in-depth analysis of the human situation and how to solve it, both individually and collectively. Therefore, we have a great contribution to make. Yet, what goes on is that the Lucy energy makes something abnormal appear normal. The abnormal thing is what? To think, what do I want for my sense gratification? Let me arrange the whole world in that way. That is abnormal. That is demoniac. That's what Kamsa's doing. However, nowadays, people think that's normal. Of course, you're expected to do that. Think about what you want. Think about what's going to make you feel good. Think about what's going to make you feel productive and wholesome. And then you do it. And if anything gets in your way, you have a right to strike it down. So the very thing people think is normal is considered from the point of view of the Shastra as demoniac. An actual normal person is a sura, a demigod-like person, one who follows the laws of God. That means the standard is scriptural injunction, not what we feel like. That actually is the difference between a demon and a devotee. One makes his own sense gratification the standard. The other makes the scriptural injunctions the standard. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yashastra vidin utsrija vartite kamakarata nasa sinamavatnoti nasukam na parangatim. For those who reject the scriptures, it's not that they'll just live a normal life without scriptures. No, they will get neither happiness nor the supreme destination. Their achievement will be useless, subject to destruction. This is not a sentimental statement. This does not mean that we're trying to be religious fanatics. We can actually document it. And Prabhupada wanted that from the Krishna consciousness movement, that we are able to document how without Krishna everything fails. And we're starting to do that. Otherwise, people think, oh, the Muslims are running around saying, follow the Quran, make the government according to the Quran, and now you guys, of course, you're much nicer and your food's really good, but you're still kind of saying the same thing, you know, that the world should be guided by your scriptures. And in this state of human progress we're at now in the 20th century, how can anybody really believe that ancient scriptures can guide mankind? This is the real problem. This is the heart of our preaching problem right now. Can you really be serious in your belief that your ancient scriptures are meant to guide the whole world? Now, we appreciate you're not being fanatical like some Muslim fundamentalists. At the same time, you have this conviction that the Vedas are the basis of human civilization and every aspect of society should be in accordance with the Vedas. We find that a bit uncomfortable at our preaching at the loft, we hear this time and time again, in a nice way, because people respect that devotees are very nice, gentlemanly, ladylike, and their prasad is wonderful, their demeanor is wonderful, so therefore they don't get alarmed like they're some kind of terrorist from Iran or something. But at the same time, they wonder, do you really think that society should be molded according to Vedic injunctions? They have a term in English, it's called theocracy, just like there's democracy, autocracy, there's also theocracy. Democracy means rule by the people, autocracy means rule by one person, and theocracy means rule by, well, the way it'll define it in a derogatory way, rule by a god trip. Society ruled by somebody's god beliefs, by a god squad. That's what a theocracy is. And then, what is the example of a theocracy? Iran. So this is what people actually fear, that once they start reading our books, they see that they're so broad and so encompassing of everything, and they see so much mention about how governments should behave. So they, are you trying to make some kind of fundamentalist situation in the world? Are you in a nice way advocating the same thing that the fanatics in the Middle East are advocating? So therefore, we have a special obligation in order to deal with this situation. We have to actually get people to take seriously Prabhupada's books with our association, through our efforts. Let's together sit down and read these books. You'll see there's nothing fanatical. You'll see it's quite logical. You'll see it's quite wonderful. And then we can actually do something about this demoniac mentality in which the standard of behavior becomes what you feel like you want to do instead of what do the scriptures want you to do. Right now, a great barrier in spreading Krishna consciousness is that people think when you follow scriptural guidelines, this means you are a deficient human being. You have not dealt with yourself enough to be your own judge. This is the heart of the Western problem. Those of you who are familiar with the folklore, King Arthur's court, there's one story which shows the heart of the Western Maya. In search of the Holy Grail, the knights were searching for the Holy Grail, and each knight went to the forest to look for the Holy Grail. Each knight went alone, that is emphasized. Always go by yourself, find your own path, don't consult anybody, do it your way. Each knight went alone, and each knight went to the darkest part of the forest. Yes, I will enter into the heart of confusion, and I will conquer. This is the Western pride, that each person has what it takes to find out on his own. And each person can even venture into the darkest darkness and still come out wonderful. So this arrogance is what is causing all the problems. To consult the scriptures, to consult a spiritual master, very backwards, very barbaric. To consult yourself and devise your own standards of spirituality, oh, very wholesome, very advanced, very well balanced. But that very thing, that's Kamsa, and it leads to Kamsa's kind of behavior. Kamsa's referred to as being here so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister. We should not read this thinking, oh, this is an extraordinary demoniac act. No. Kamsa is displaying the basis of all demoniac behavior. So, the great soul Vasudeva is described that he was to be the father of Krishna. Krishna doesn't need any father, but because there are living entities in their pure condition who want to love Krishna that way, Krishna agrees to accept a mother and father. The background is given in the 10th canto, where Krishna, in the third chapter of the 10th canto, presented to Vasudeva and Devaki their past history, that in a previous millennium, you were known as Krishni and Sutapa, and you performed great austerities for 12,000 years according to the time of the demigods, not human time, according to the time of the demigods. But Prabhupada points out that 12,000 years according to the time of the demigods, if you're living in that situation, is not a long time. Well, we think it's long, but their whole lifespan, Vasudeva and Sutapa, was measured in that way. So in any case, they performed great austerities, ultimately only eating the leaves that fell from the trees, doing pranayama. What was their goal? They wanted a son who was like Krishna. And once having pleased the Lord with their austerities, the Lord appeared before them and said, yes, I will give you that benediction, that you can have a son like me, but actually there's no one like me. Therefore, I will be your son. So, in this way, Krishni Garba was incarnated. The incarnation of the Lord is the son of Krishni. That was in the Treta Yuga. So, then once again, the same personalities appeared as Kashyapa and Aditi, and they became the father and mother of Upendra, or Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation. And then, again, they appeared as Vasudeva and Devaki, and they took on the role of Krishna's mother and father. Now, the scriptures explain that the incarnation of the Lord that manifested as the son of Sutapa and Krishni, as well as Kashyapa and Aditi, that was only a partial incarnation, partial expansion of Krishna. But the Supreme Absolute Truth that appeared for Vasudeva and Devaki, that was the original personality of Godhead. You may remember that Krishna first appeared in the maternity room from Devaki as four-handed Vishnu. But there was some concern on both the side of Devaki and Krishna. Devaki was thinking, Krishna, you're here as four-handed Vishnu. None of my neighbors will ever believe that I gave birth to Vishnu. If they see you like this, they won't believe it. So if you would kindly change yourself into an ordinary child, then I could tell my neighbors I had an ordinary child. It's humorous because Devaki is a mixture of love of Godhead in awe and reverence, as well as love of Krishna as her son. So therefore she's saying like that, Krishna, you've appeared, you've taken birth and in a four-handed Vishnu form. No one's ever going to believe I gave birth to you. Please change yourself into a baby. On the other hand, Prabhupada reveals, Krishna was thinking, Devaki, if I had appeared to you first as an ordinary child, you wouldn't have believed I'm Vishnu. Therefore, first I appeared as four-handed Vishnu. So you can know that, yes, you really gave birth to me, and now I will change myself into an ordinary baby. So there were concerns on both sides. Concerns by Devaki and concerns by Krishna. In this way, you can see that love of Godhead is a reciprocal thing. It's not one-sided. Krishna had his concerns, Devaki had her concerns, and both things are presented in the scriptures. Devaki and Vasudev, their love of God is described as Aishvarya Shitala, meaning, their love of God is described as Aishvarya Purna, full of opulence, whereas the residents of Vrindavan, their love of God is described as Aishvarya Shitala, no opulence. Vasudev and Devaki are described as near the Vrindavan love of God, but not absorbed in Vrindavan love of God. They knew Krishna was their son. At the same time, they knew Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, very rarely did they ever have a glimpse that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Almost always, they simply thought, Krishna is our son. Therefore, whenever there was some danger, they would pray to Vishnu, please protect our baby. And when Krishna successfully killed some demon, they would thank Vishnu, thank you for protecting our baby Krishna. So that was the love of Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda. Whereas Vasudeva and Devaki, you'll see throughout the 10th canto, they would go back and forth between treating Krishna as their son and treating him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when you read Nectar of Devotion, you'll see a list of those who are in parental love of Krishna in terms of their closeness to Krishna. And first is Mother Yasoda. And then comes Nanda Maharaj and Mother Rohini and the elderly cowherd women of Vrindavan who nursed their sons, who were actually Krishna during the Brahma Vimohana Leela, when Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves, and Krishna manifested as the calves and the sons. Vasudeva and Devaki are some way further down the list. Of course, in the spiritual world, there is simply perfection. But the great acharyas, just for the enjoyment of the devotees and to carefully delineate the transcendental science, they've analyzed in that way. That in terms of parental love of God, without even any recognition of Krishna's opulences, the example is Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. Of course, sometimes immature devotees, they say, oh, then I won't read about Vasudeva and Devaki, I won't pay any attention to them because they're inferior. And Prabhupada would get very angry about that. We have to be very mature in our trying to understand these spiritual topics. And if we take shelter of Prabhupada's purports, certainly we'll get that maturity. So, any questions? One quick question. Shantaras. Oh, that's something else, yes. But ordinarily the cows in Vrindavan, Prabhupada explains, are in Shantaras because they don't actively do service for Krishna. Krishna has to activate them and then they can do something. Just like flowers, once Krishna or someone picks a flower to give to Krishna, then it's engaged in Krishna's service. Therefore, it's said to be Shantaras. That is Prabhupada's analysis. So the cows also. Prabhupada says, you can read that at the end of Science and Self-Realization. Prabhupada says, everybody likes to see Krishna with his hand around a cow. The cows are in Shantaras. Krishna activates them for his service, and then they're engaged in that way. Whereas in Dasyaras, love of God, and in servitorship, you're actively doing things for Krishna. And of course, some acharyas don't even consider Shantaras as a real rasa, but in any case, it's mentioned in Nectar of Devotion. Yes?
preaching and the Shastras are preaching and preaching to through our lives and that what we stand for, that we know this dispensation that is already known.
How to do that?
How are you getting around to the changes?
It's hard work, but that's what we're meant for. we have to try to understand the disease and apply the cure. The cure is in Prabhupada's books, and it takes a lot of work. But that's what we're made for. If you want to be a preacher, it's hard work. You have to prepare yourself, just like a doctor goes to school for many years, studies diseases, studies how to cure them. Similarly, Prabhupada said that if you want to be a preacher, you must train yourself up in Bhagavatam and Gita. And then he said you can go all over the world and people will respect you if you're just with Master Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. But that takes work. All glory to
Vrajam Sishtam Padaikena
Vrajam Sishtam Padaikena
Yithai Vaikena Dakshati
Yithai Vaikena Dakshati
Yithai Trina Jalau Kairam
Yithai Trina Jalau Kairam
Dehi Karma Gatim Gata
Dehi Karma Gatim Gata
Vrajam Sishtam Padaikena
Vrajam Sishtam Padaikena
Yithai Vaikena Gatshati
Yithai Vaikena Gatshati
Yithai Trina Jalau Kaivam
Yithai Trina Jalau Kaivam
Dehi Karma Gatim Gata
Dehi Karma Gatim Gata. Rajam Sishtam Padakena
Rajam Sishtam Padakena
Yathalai Kena Gatshati
Yathalai Kena Gatshati
Yathatrina Jalau Kaimam
Yathatrina Jalau Kaimam
Dehi Karma Gatingataha
Dehi Karma Gatingataha.
A person while traveling on the road, Tishtan,
while standing,
Padayekena,
on one foot,
Yitha,
as,
Eva,
indeed,
Ekena, by another foot, Gashati, goes, Yitha,
as,
Trina Jalauka,
a worm on a vegetable,
Avam,
in this way,
Dehi,
the living entity,
Karma Gatim,
the
reactions of fruitive activities,
Gata,
undergoes. Just as a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. Purport. This is the process of the soul's transmigration from one body to another. At the time of death, according to his mental condition, the living being is carried by the subtle body, consisting of mind, intelligence, and ego, to another gross body. When higher authorities have decided what kind of gross body a living entity will have, he is forced to enter such a body, and thus he automatically gives up his previous body. Dull-minded persons who do not have the intelligence to understand this process of transmigration take for granted that when the gross body is finished, one's life is finished forever. Such persons have no brains with which to understand the process of transmigration. At the present moment, there is great opposition to the Hare Krishna movement, which is being called the brainwashing movement. But actually, the so-called scientists, philosophers, and other leaders in the Western countries have no brains at all. The Hare Krishna movement is trying to elevate such foolish persons by enlightening their intelligence so that they will take advantage of the human body. Unfortunately, because of gross ignorance, they regard the Hare Krishna movement as a brainwashing movement. They do not know that without God consciousness, one is forced to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Because of their devilish brains, they will next be forced to accept an abominable life, and practically never be able to liberate themselves from the conditioned life of material existence. How this transmigration of the soul takes place is very clearly explained in this verse. Om Agana Kimalandasya Yananjana Shalakya Chakshur Malita Mina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We're offering our obeisances to our spiritual master for opening our eyes, which were tightly shut. We were born in the darkness of ignorance. What is that darkness of ignorance? That, as Prabhupada points out in this purport, we have no idea who we are and how we are changing bodies. As everybody understands, such knowledge is considered elementary according to the standard of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Krishna explains in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, out of 18 chapters, how just as a person changes clothes, the living entity changes his body. Here you're hearing from Vasudeva in the midst of the greatest disaster on his wedding day, as his own brother-in-law is driving Vasudeva and his wife Devaki to their home. Suddenly, his brother-in-law wants to kill his wife without a moment's deliberation. Kamsa has grabbed Devaki's hair, drawn his sword, and is about to separate her head from the body. Yet, Vasudeva is such an elevated transcendentalist that he's able to speak like this. Such statements, such verses, show that Krishna consciousness is not some theoretical body of beliefs that sits on the brain. Krishna consciousness is not some kind of religious creed that you recite. No, Krishna consciousness is intimately a part of even the deepest parts of our life, and that's easily seen when there is a crisis. When there is a crisis in your life, when there is a very difficult moment, an unexpected disaster, and then everybody can see what we are made of. It's easy to talk religion, it's easy to talk self-realization when circumstances are pleasant. But when the body is being attacked, or when the body of a loved one is being attacked, then we can easily see what we are made of. And others can see that also. But also to be an example for others how to handle these crises. What is the greatest crisis? From the material point of view, the greatest crisis is you will lose your body, and your loved ones will lose their bodies also. Of course, from the spiritual point of view, the greatest crisis is forgetting Krishna. That's why in the second chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Svapamapyasa dharmasya chate matovaya. A little advancement in bhakti will protect us from the greatest fear. The greatest danger. What is that? Losing the human form of life. Of course, people today, a lot of them, as we've discussed many times, they all accept transmigration, popularly known to them as reincarnation. It's quite prevalent these days. Yet, they all feel quite assured that they're always going to be human beings. They have this foolish assurance that some or other, they'll go on as human beings, and they'll go on learning their lessons, and when the time is right, they'll reach perfection along with the rest of the universe, because the whole universe is moving towards perfection, and all you have to do is be with the universe, whatever that means, and soon you'll be perfect too, because that's just the way things wind up. So, people, they talk about how, yeah, I know we're not the body, yes, I know that we're changing bodies, there's life after death, but they have a very sentimental understanding of material nature. They don't know what a deadly process transformation of a soul is. They think that material nature is going to be so kind upon them in their forgetfulness of Krishna. This contamination is so great in the atmosphere that even we devotees become lulled asleep by this, thinking, oh, so what if I take another birth? Things will be all right. It's not so important to solve the problem now. There's so much time. I just should have a good desire in my heart, and gradually things will work out. However, the attitude that Srila Prabhupada has taught us is that if we're really serious about practicing Krishna consciousness, we should have a very militant attitude. To have a militant attitude in Krishna consciousness doesn't mean that you are a fanatic. It means you understand reality, that material nature is forcing upon me great crises. I must prepare myself. Of course, we all know what the eighth wonder of the world is. If you ask an ordinary person, what are the wonders of the world, you'll say the Sphinx or the pyramids. For example, even to this day, there are so many so-called metaphysical books written explaining the mystery of the pyramids and how the pyramids were built by so much occult knowledge. Of course, devotees who understand the Vedas know that Egyptian culture and Greek culture is just outcast Vedic culture. In any case, people consider the Sphinx, the pyramid, and also some modern creations, the Eiffel Tower, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, they consider these the great wonders of the world. However, the Vedic standard for measuring the great wonders of the world is different. It is stated in Mahabharata, Ahani Ahani Bhutani Gashyanti Amalayam. Every day, people are being dragged to the court of Yamaraj, the demigod in charge of death. And everybody sees this, and every day people are dying. But still, each person thinks, it won't happen to me. This is the version of the Shastras. That is the great wonder of the world. Each person is thinking, although everyone else is dying, it won't happen to me. Or, it won't happen to me until I'm ready, because I'm a good person, and I think I'm all right. Therefore, nature will treat me nicely. Everyone has this contamination of a false sense of security with material nature. And it is that false sense of security that the Krishna consciousness movement is attacking. And therefore, people get a little upset. They don't want this illusory contentment to be taken away from them, like a baby when you're taking away the baby's bottle or blanket. They want to rest in peace, in ignorance. And Krishna conscious persons are dedicated to dispelling ignorance. Therefore, there's sometimes great misunderstandings and also great oppression. Those who do not want to wake up view any attempt to rouse them as violence. Everybody knows, when you want to sleep and someone's disturbing you, in fact, if they do even more than disturb you, if they actually wake you for no good reason, you know what your reaction is. Why did you wake me up now? It's not my time to get up. I'm so tired. Let me sleep. That is the reaction. And that is, on the spiritual plane, that is the reaction of those who want to remain in ignorance. Don't wake me up. What are you talking about? This knowledge you're trying to give is brainwashing. Let us sleep. Leave us alone. This is the situation because living entities come in this world to forget Krishna. Well, what does it mean to forget Krishna? It means to think of ourselves as the most important thing. That is forgetting Krishna. That is demoniac. To think that we are the standard, that we are the center. We may not say it like that, but if that is the unconscious assumption of our life upon which our behavior is based, that is the Maya. We've been talking about this recently, how to recognize demoniac influences in one's life. It doesn't mean that one looks like Frankenstein. It doesn't mean that one turns into a werewolf at midnight. To be demoniac means to think, I am the center, I am the standard. That is why, ultimately, Mayavad philosophy is called demoniac. Because, in a very sophisticated, complicated way, even by distorting the Vedic literatures, it tries to make the living entity as the center, as the all in all. That is demoniac. Whether you are a crude, blue-collar demon or a very scholarly, intellectual demon, the whole point is, if your life is based on the illusion that you are the center, that you are the standard, that is demoniac. And this is what we're up against today. People do not understand what religion is. That's why Prabhupada said the truth very clearly. Religion means to follow the laws of God. It does not mean to brand yourself as a Christian, as a Muslim, as a Hare Krishna. It means to follow the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means to be guided by the Shastra. The Krishna Conscious Movement is not trying to teach people how to be religious. It is trying to tell them what real religion is and to accept that. But we're not trying to teach people how to be religious in the ordinary sense. We are teaching, accept the laws of God. Follow the scriptures. And then there can be hope. Otherwise, who will understand they're living in a hostile environment? That is not the nature of Maya, to teach people the truth. The nature of the looser energy is to hide the truth. Therefore, people think that this comfortable feeling they get by being in this world, they think that is substantial. And anything that tries to dispel this false substantiality, they get angry about. But our purpose is different. We are waking people. We are shaking them. One way or another, please recognize the truth. You are changing bodies, and you are not in control of the system. The system for changing bodies has been designed by someone else. You must get knowledge of who is controlling. Certainly you are not controlling. Some people, they claim to understand, yes, we believe in reincarnation. Certainly we're not the bodies, we're changing bodies. But they think that they'll be in control of that process. Whatever you want to be, you'll be in your next life. In one sense, that is true. But in a very minor sense. People today like to talk about how we are creators of our own reality. We are co-creators of our own reality. But our contribution to creating reality is very minor. Everything is under the control of material nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is true that according to how our mind is at the time of death, we'll create our own future in that respect. The overall truth is, we did not create the system. Therefore, although we can say we are co-creators, our part of the creation process is very, very minor. It's just like you get a playpen for a baby. And in the playpen, you place various rattles and various toys and things like that. And you let the baby crawl around the playpen. Now, in one sense, that baby is the co-creator of reality. The baby can decide, oh, I will pick up the rattle. Oh, I will pick up the toy. Did you live in a playpen? Did you have a playpen? So, if the baby is, let's just say, the baby is very proud. Just see what I'm doing. I can choose whether it will be the rattle, or I can choose whether it will be the toy truck. Just see how I'm creating reality. Just see how my decisions are so important. Meanwhile, the parents laugh. How can any little child feel that way? The little child is in a playpen which we have provided, and the child is playing with a few toys we have provided. The child can only go 2 feet this way, 2 feet that way. Everything is under control, although the baby does have a little bit of independence, whether he will roll to this side of the playpen or roll to that side of the playpen. So in that sense, yes, the baby is a co-creator of reality. But everybody knows, in comparison to the potency and control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is the use in talking about the co-creating ability, co-creative ability of a human being? So people cannot see things in perspective. They get so fascinated with their own abilities that they forget their potencies are so insignificant compared to Krishna's. Therefore, the Krishna Consciousness Movement is an attempt to put things back into perspective, to put human beings back in their place. And these verses by Vasudeva, they're very wonderful for explaining to people about transmigration. They give very graphic examples, just like this verse today. As a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous ones, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. So, here Vasudeva is using nature examples. People, they're very fascinated by nature examples these days because they claim to be realizing that unless we're in harmony with nature and love nature, humanity is doomed. The kind of solutions they're recommending to stop the destruction of the environment is that you should love nature. You should always do something every day that puts you in contact with nature directly. Dig a hole in your backyard. Call out to a bird. And in this way, you'll start to open up your suppressed feelings of intimacy with nature. People think that's going to actually cause human beings to give up their destructive ways and become advanced. The problem, however, is the dirt in the heart. Therefore, when you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, when you hear Vasudeva explaining the process of transmigration, you're not simply just getting jnana or knowledge. You are getting purification of the heart and reawakening of your dormant propensity to serve Krishna because you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the difference. By hearing Vasudeva explain transmigration of the soul, in addition to being able to understand the process, you're also becoming purified and you're becoming enlivened in devotional service to Krishna. This is the standard of Srimad Bhagavatam. To teach you reality and illusion, both as emanations from Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 2, Text 39.
Nathe bhavasyesha bhavasya karanam
Nathe bhavasyesha bhavasya karanam
Vinadanodam bhattatarkayamahe Bhavasyitra apya vijaya
Bhavasyitra apya vijaya
Kritaya chastvaya vayashrayatmani
Kritaya chastvaya vayashrayatmani
Nathe bhavasyesha bhavasya karanam.
O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure and potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mamaevamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and thus they are qualitatively one with the Lord. We can understand that when the Supreme Lord appears or disappears as an incarnation, there is no other cause than his pleasure potency. We cannot force the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear. As he says in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hidarmasya ganya bhavati bharata adhitanam vajarmasya tadatmanam shriyam yaham. Whenever and wherever there is a declining religious practice of descendant Bharata and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. When there is a need to diminish a burden created by the demons, the Supreme Godhead can do it in many ways because he has multifarious energies. There is no need for him to come as an incarnation, since he is not forced to do anything like ordinary living entities. The living entities come to this material world in the spirit of enjoyment. But because they want to enjoy without Krishna, Krishna Bahirmukha Bodhya Bansha Kore, they suffer birth, death, old age, and disease under the control of the illusory mind. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, however, no such causes are involved. His descent is an act of his pleasure potency. We should always remember this distinction between the Lord and the ordinary living entity, and not uselessly argue that the Lord cannot come. There are philosophers who do not believe in the Lord's incarnation, and who ask, why should the Supreme Lord come? But the answer is, why should he not come? Why should he be controlled by the desire of a living entity? The Lord is free to do whatever he likes. Therefore, this verse says, Vina vinodam bhatatarkayamahe. It is only for his pleasure that he comes, although he does not need to come. Om Ajnanachimandasya, Ajnanandinasvapya, I see everyone again. Been very sick for about 10 days. Simultaneously working very hard on other things. Why should Krishna come to this world? Why not? Many people, when you try to explain to them about the Krishna avatar, Supreme Godhead, they say, well, their attitude is like, what business does God, if there is one, what business does he have in this world? This is our world, in other words, and we do with it what we like. If there is some kind of God, whatever that word means, it's not very relevant to the affairs of this world. Some people get some succor and comfort by believing in this God. Others, they know that you're left in this world to your own devices and your own abilities, and you've got to make a go at it as best you can. No need in using God as a crutch. God may exist, God may not. If he exists, great, still you've got to do your thing. If he doesn't exist, you still got to do your thing. So, what is the point of having the whole population absorbed and going to these churches? Of course, it's nice once a week for those who need that kind of a thing, because it gives them some kind of meaning, you know? And it's actually kind of nice for society, because to a certain extent, it keeps people thinking moral. You know, it keeps society a little bit stabilized. Of course, on the other hand, a lot of bad comes from God and religion, because people repress themselves. They get guilt complexes about their natural desires. And in this way, they experience psychological damage. So when you add up the good and bad about religion and this God thing, it's kind of a balanced thing, you know. Some good caused by God and religion, and some bad. Therefore, in a normal, advanced, civilized human society like we have now, allow religion, but just don't take it too seriously. It's, you know, like some people collect stamps. Yeah. Yeah. Some people serve. Some people are into God and religion. I mean, it's not that everybody is a complete atheist. That's, you know, a little too much. But the point is, whatever God is up there or out there, or, you know, he just wants you to be true to yourself. You know, and feel a sense of connectedness and your own integrity. Feel a sense of your own meaning. That's what God would want of us. And what happens, happens. Because life is a learning process. And you're just learning your lessons. And the lessons come and you learn more, and just gradually you get more and more expert. And yeah, probably there are other lives. Probably you'll have another life. So many people these days, they joke, you know, how in my last life I must have been a carpenter because I always liked to build, or in my next life I'm going to be something else because I always like to do this now. 20 years ago, people talking about reincarnation would be quite rare. Now, they just joke about it. They don't think about the implications of what they're saying, however. So they take it that way. Yeah, we'll always be around. The New Age has taught us that. We'll always be here learning our lessons. God's going to allow that if there is a God, as they talk, as they teach it in the churches. The whole point is that the universe is evolving and moving towards perfection. We're all learning our lessons, and God's going to give us that chance if you want to say it's God. Or you can say it's the universe, the force that be with us, the power, the energy, whatever. It's just things are going on, you know. So the main thing is devise your own principles, get your goals together, get your purpose together, get your values together, be true to yourself, have a sense of self-integrity. Know what you want and why, and then you do it. And then, that is positive living. So, then they hear about Krishna. Just like someone was telling me at the loft a few days ago. When I read the Krishna book, of course, at least the person's reading the Krishna book, but when I read the Krishna book, it's just super real. And when I say super real, I mean just fantastic. It's just mythological. It's too much. Too rich. Too sweet. If you actually use those words. It's too sweet. It's just getting kind of sticky. When I read it. In other words, he was admitting that for his mundane intelligence, Krishna's pastimes just seemed mythological. At the same time, the book was sticky. He used that word sticky. It was kind of like sticking to him, even though it was mythology, and even though everything in Krishna's pastimes is against how his intelligence has been trained, still, it was sticking to him. So I use that word, sticky. But, you know, sticky sweet. You know, like, something's coming over me that I don't want to come over me. And anyway, it's mythology. I doubt that it's a real Vedic literature. The Mayavadis said like that. That the Puranas, Gita, Bhagavatam, they're actually not real Vedic literature. And therefore, so many so-called Indologists at the university, they also have that attitude that these are later editions of nice stories meant for the less intelligent. Of course, if you want to say that Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam are meant for less intelligent, then the Indologists also include themselves as less intelligent. Somehow they exempt themselves and place themselves on a platform of being great knowers as compared to those who are subjectively and sentimentally absorbed in religion. That's an inferior position. The high position is to intellectually be above it all. To be able to just look at any religion and understand it's the same old thing and it's what people need and what they get absorbed in, and you know, in this continent they believe this way, in that continent they believe that way, and I, as your empowered university scholar, can see through it all. It's interesting studying this stuff, you know. Some people study Aboriginal culture, other people study religions. It's just, you know, one of the phenomena of the three modes of material nature. So this is the attitude today, that religion is kind of a pain in the neck sometimes, and sometimes it's kind of nice. But the main thing is society should not take religion too seriously. That is the problem. Because it's caused some good and it's caused some bad. It's kind of a balanced thing. It's kind of a nuisance. Like a pesky kid you've got around the house. You can't get rid of the kid completely. At the same time, you don't want to take the kid too seriously. Now, how does that relate to the Hare Krishna people? That's the problem. They are taking religion very, very seriously. So much so that they're basing their life 24 hours a day in that. And they look happy, but I mean, there's got to be something missing. You know, they've got to have some space up there, and, you know, that's not filled with some brain matter or something. Because, I mean, to reject this world which is full of variety, to turn your back on pleasure, hobbies, and individuality, just to dedicate yourselves to some God concept, who really would want to do such a thing? And what about this Krishna? Who is this Krishna? Why would Krishna want to come here? As the prophet says in the purport, There are philosophers who do not believe in the Lord's incarnation, and who ask, why should the Supreme Lord come? And Prabhupada writes the answer, why should he not come? And you can look at it another way. We are just tiny, insignificant living entities. We have come. We have our imitation pastimes. So why cannot Krishna come and display his infinite, inconceivable pastimes? Why do we think we can do something that Krishna can't? Why do we think that we are the measure of everything? We can try for pleasure. We can try to know things. We can try for this, try for that. But Krishna cannot. In fact, the truth is the reverse. Because Krishna can, we can try. Not that we'll succeed, but because Krishna can, we can try. And this material world is an illusory place for you to imitate God. Now, what about God, this word God? You may recall that in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first or second verse of the first canto, actually no, in the preface or introduction, Prabhupada writes that the conception of God and the conception of the Supreme Controller, Ishvara, are not on the same level. This is the difference between Krishna consciousness and Christianity, for example, or Judaism, any of the great Western religious traditions with their Western God understanding. Right from the beginning of Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, the two conceptions are not on the same level, God and Ishvara. Ishvara means Supreme Controller. As soon as you say Supreme Controller, Ishvara, Ishvara Paramakrishna, that means everything else is under control. And that's what people don't want. Therefore, when they talk about God, it gets so wishy-washy and so empty. Because, and many times our own devotees don't realize why it's frustrating talking to these people about God. What's missing? Our own devotees don't understand. Because our own devotees have been trained by Prabhupada and his representatives when you say the word God, immediately you mean Ishwar, controller. But no, it's not that Westerners, when they hear the word God, they think of Ishwar. They just think the old man up there, or the force that be, or whatever and wherever and however. Nothing appears in their brain. Absolutely nothing. And that's something that's hard for devotees to understand. God's the Lord, and you'll try to explain. They'll just... There's nothing in between, the walls of his skull to relate to the fact that we're understanding Parameshwar, the Supreme Controller. Even persons who are contaminated by Mayavadi philosophy or pop Western Mayavadi philosophy, they do not understand the full implications of what it means that Krishna is the Supreme Controller. If there is Ishwar, how can others become Ishwar? Impossible. Ishwar means controller. Controller means everything else is under control. If you're in the everything else category, then you cannot be Ishwar. You are controlled. The position is occupied eternally. How is it that you are out of control now, but when you wake up, you realize you are Ishwar? Ishwar is not ever out of control. The whole Bhagavatam will teach you that. Krishna is never out of control. And everything is under Krishna's control. So there's no question of the controlled being the controller. It's not that now you are out of control and in the future you will become the controller. It doesn't work like that. So, when we actually understand God as Ishwar, the Supreme Controller, then so many things become clear. How does Krishna control? How is Krishna's control manifest? Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam will teach you that. Therefore, Westerners trained in a Judeo-Christian background, or in the pop Mayavadi New Age background, they cannot answer any kind of real questions. because they don't understand the all-pervading control of the Parameshwar. How does Krishna control? Through his energies, Ekadesha Sasyajna Jyoshna Vistarne Yata Parasya Brahmana Shakti Chetanamakiram Jagat. Just like a fire situated in one place sends its heat and light everywhere. Similarly, Krishna, situated in his own abode, has his energies everywhere. You cannot go anywhere and not find Krishna's energies. Whatever you find anywhere, that is Krishna's energies. That is Krishna's energy. And even if you think you found something that's not Krishna, that thought that this is not Krishna, this has got nothing to do with Krishna, that's also Krishna, but it's just illusory energy. So how can you get away? This is the conclusion of Bhagavatam. You cannot get away from Krishna. Everyone says, Gijai, we cannot get away from Krishna. But there is a problem. And that problem is being talked about in this verse. The living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. But here is our problem. The external energy of Krishna. We have a fondness for the external energy. You ever look at yourself in that way? I have a fondness, I have affection for the external energy of the Lord. Just think about it. How does it sound? I have a fondness for the external energy. Or you can get even more, get even more deep into it. I love a sense of intimacy with the external energy. My greatest aspiration is to just have peaceful intimacy with the external energy and receive the full blessings and full meanings of the external energy. Full sense of fulfillment. This is our embarrassing condition. We are actually qualitatively equal to Krishna, but looking at our lives, you never know it. We read this on every page, just like here. O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruit activities. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you, they also